Are you seeking fulfillment for your life? Do you want freedom from fear? That's why we're here. Welcome to Jesus 101, introducing you to the real Jesus. And now, here's your host, Elizabeth Talbot, with Mike Tucker.
I'm Mike Tucker.
I'm Elizabeth Talbot.
A story that I read was about a boy in a Soviet concentration camp. Mm. His parents had been separated from him. His father was killed. And the boy was actually growing up in the Soviet concentration camp. There was a man who had befriended the boy. And at some point in the story, the boy actually stole a bar of soap. And the prison guards figured out that a bar of soap was missing. Mm. And so he also figured out that the boy had taken it, and all the prisoners were lined up in the yard, and he was going to shoot the boy as an example to all not to steal. Mm. But before he pulled his gun out, he was distracted for a moment, and the man who had befriended the boy, standing right next to him, reached down and took the bar of soap from him and produced it, showing the prison guard that he was the one who had stolen it, and the guard shot the man instead of the boy.
So the man took the place of the boy.
Right.
He was the innocent one, but
he suffered for the boy's crime, which was stealing a bar of soap. Mm. And that, to me, of course, reminds me of the substitutionary death of Jesus. He died for my sin, whether it's a bar of soap or something else. Jesus died for me.
You know, this is one of the hardest topics for people to understand about the gospel. And maybe that's why it is that so many people don't live with the assurance of salvation. Mm-hmm. They say, how could it be that a person that deserves an A gets an F, and I, who deserve an F, get an A in mm-hmm. the eyes of God? I mean, that sounds unfair, isn't it?
It does. It turns our economy upside down because, you know, we get what we pay for. There is no free lunch. All those things that I was raised with are now, they're out the window when it comes to the gospel. It doesn't make sense when we look at it from that standpoint.
You know, the Gospel of Luke is the gospel of outrageous grace. Mm. You know, he's always trying to show that the most undeserving ones are the ones that get the grace from Jesus. I mean, he has all the parables like the prodigal son who comes back and he doesn't deserve to be received back. Mm-hmm. He has the thief on the cross. We're going to talk about all of these. These are Lucan material to show that even the most undeserving gets this verdict of innocent mm-hmm. in front of God, because Jesus, who was innocent, was proclaimed guilty.
And that is really a major component of Luke's story here. He wants us to know how innocent Jesus is, that Jesus actually was innocent completely, that everyone understood his innocence, and yet he was killed for us.
As a matter of fact, Luke adds a whole section to the trial of Jesus. Most Gospels talk about Jesus and Pilate and perhaps a part of Herod's trial. But here in chapter 23 of Luke, verse 6 to 16 is of Lucan source, which means that only this gospel records it. And it's a very interesting one because it is when they're looking at Jesus and saying, okay, so what is it that this man did wrong again? Mm-hmm. You know, so Pilate and Herod, they keep bringing this up. We don't know what he did wrong, you know. So maybe we can start reading.
Let's look at verse 6. When Pilate heard it, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. And when he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself was also in Jerusalem at that time. Now Herod was very glad when he saw Jesus, for he had wanted to see him for a long time because he had been hearing about him, and was hoping to see some sign performed by him. He wanted to see a magic act, evidently.
Yes, it's very interesting because a lot of the rulers were interested in Jesus for that fact. They wanted to see his powers, you know.
Verse 9, and he questioned him at some length, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priest and the scribes were standing there accusing him vehemently. And Herod with his soldiers, after treating him with contempt and mocking him, dressed him in a gorgeous robe and sent him back to Pilate. Now Herod and Pilate became friends with one another that very day, for before they had been enemies with each other.
This is one of the paradoxes of the Gospel of Luke. Here we have the Herod and his soldiers mistreating Jesus, kind of actually mocking him, addressing him as the king, putting this gorgeous robe and doing all kinds of things to him. And then between Herod and Pilate, they really don't know what to do with this man because they can't find nothing to say that he's guilty.
They're used to finding some crime and some evidence of a crime. They can't find it with this man. And they both acknowledge that he is innocent. And so that's why it's such a struggle for them. That's why Pilate sent him to Herod. Herod sent him back to Pilate.
So they're going back and forth. And
what do we do with this man?
That's right. And so now he's back with Pilate in verse 13. And Pilate actually calls the chief priest and the rulers and the people. Now, Pilate was one of those people that really wanted to please the people. Mm-hmm. And so he's calling the chief priest, the rulers, and the people, and he's saying to them these words on verse 14.
You brought this man to me as one who incites the people to rebellion. And behold, having examined him before you, I have found no guilt in this man regarding the charges which you have made against him.
Now, this is very important for Luke, and as you will see in some subsequent programs, he's constantly declaring how Jesus is innocent, and he's adding all these stories that he has collected about the trials of Jesus to show that, in fact, Jesus was not guilty. And here Pilate, in his own words, says, I have found no guilt in this man.
So a Roman official has declared him to be innocent. But he goes on, verse 15, nor has Herod, for he sent him back to us, and behold, nothing deserving death has been done by him. So even Herod, he says, has found him innocent. I found him innocent. So the King Herod and Pilate both have found the man innocent.
And verse 16 is one of those paradoxes.
Yeah.
I will punish him, and then I will release him. Imagine, I have found nothing wrong with him, but just to keep you guys happy, I'm just going to punish him, and I'm going to release him.
Let me beat him up for a little bit. Maybe that'll make you happy, and then, you can all go home, and we'll all forget that this ever happened. But they're not willing to let that go.
Well, the point that Luke is trying to make is a point that was in prophecy for many, many years before. Already the prophet Isaiah had this prophecy that we find in Isaiah 53, that Jesus, even though he was innocent, he would be suffering for the transgressions of his people. It wasn't for his own transgressions. Mm-hmm. It's not because he was guilty. He was innocent, but he would be considered guilty and he would be counted with the transgressors.
One place where we find this prophecy is in Isaiah chapter 53. And we're going to start with the last half of verse 8. It says that he was cut out of the land of the living for the transgression of my people to whom the stroke was due.
Yeah, the prophet was asking, who's going to understand this?
Yeah.
Who's going to understand that this man is dying for the transgressions of my people, he says, to whom the stroke was due? They deserve the guilt, and this man is innocent, and he's still going to be oppressed and afflicted and eventually die in his place. You know this chapter very well. You've seen it perhaps on TV or in other places where some movies, the movie The Passion started mm-hmm. with Isaiah 53, verse 5. He was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Ask you to take special attention on the pronouns in verse 5 of Isaiah 53. Maybe we can do back and forth to show the pronouns.
But he was pierced through.
For our transgressions.
He was crushed for.
Our iniquities.
The chastisement of our well-being.
Fell upon him.
And by his scourging.
We are healed. The substitutionary part of Jesus' sacrifice is the most striking part of the gospel. That is, he's not suffering for his own iniquities or his own transgressions, but that he's suffering for our iniquities and our transgressions.
He was not guilty, and yet he was numbered with those people who are guilty. He was numbered among the transgressors, it says in verse 12. Therefore, I will allot him a portion with the great, and he will divide the booty with the strong, because he poured out himself to death and was numbered with the transgressors, yet he himself bore the sin of many and interceded for the transgressors.
See, here's the secret to understand all this innocence that we keep talking about, Pilate and Herod and everybody, and you will see more people even will declare him innocent after his death, and yet he is going to be tried as if he was guilty.
Mm-hmm. Now, the people who deserve to be tried is us. Me, because I'm guilty. The one thing you know for sure about me, Elizabeth, is that I'm a sinner. I have sinned, and that means I've fallen short of God's glory, and I deserve death. But Jesus has died that death for me. All of my sins that I have ever committed or ever will commit were paid for at Calvary. He paid that penalty for me and did the same thing for you and for all of our listeners as well.
You know, this is the assurance of salvation that many people, even Christians, sometimes don't have because they accept Jesus as a personal Savior, but they don't understand the substitutionary part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Martin Luther said it so well. He said, when I look at myself, I don't understand how I could ever be saved.
Mm.
But when I look at Jesus, he said, I don't understand how I could ever be lost.
Yeah. And I think that that is a very profound statement. I think that when even those who don't know Christ look at this whole matter of getting into heaven, they realize that our works are not good enough. Mark Twain said, if heaven went by merit, your dog would get in and you would be left out.
That's a great statement,
yeah.
Too.
So he saw that our goodness is not good enough to get us into heaven. We needed someone who would pay our penalty for us and whose obedience could be substitutionary for us as well.
And yes, grace is outrageous. This is what Luke is trying to say. Yes, you are guilty. Yes, Jesus is innocent. And this is the good news that the angels were proclaiming back in the beginning of the gospel. This is the good news of mega joy.
No wonder they were singing. No wonder they were excited because sinners, broken sinners, are going to heaven because of Jesus.
Exactly. And that was the news. He said, a Savior has been born.
Yes.
A Savior who would die in your place. Those are the good news.
That is the good news, and this gospel tells us that Jesus Christ died for you. I don't care how bad that sin may be, or how often you have done it, or how many they may be, he is your substitute. He's paid your penalty. When you look at that, and you see that love, you have to respond to it. You have to respond to one who has loved you so much, and the only response is to say, Lord, here am I accept you, do with me as you will, I am yours. I accept your gift of grace today.
Thank you for joining us today on Jesus 101. For more insights and resources, connect with us at Jesus101.tv. That's Jesus101.tv. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Jesus101Institute and follow us on Twitter at Jesus101 Media. Until next time, live free.